Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to How to Be Sound, a podcast where I, Rosemary McCabe, speak to people I think are sounder than I am. Although today's might be an exception because she's now laughing at how really wonderfully professionally I've done my intro. This is probably going to be the first podcast since I mentioned that I am leaving my full-time job and I am now going to be writing full-time on a freelance basis from home. And the number one way that I'm going to be making my living, drumroll please, is from Patreon. So if you are not already a subscriber and you would like to support me in my endeavours to write more and hopefully eventually write the damn book, then I would really appreciate it if you'd pledge as little as $1 a month on Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe with an A in my Mac. Today I am joined by Jennifer Stevens, who is a journalist, magazine editor, mom. Do you identify as a mom? Are you putting that in your Twitter bio now?
I am not putting that in my Twitter bio, but
Mother and wife.
Yes. Maybe I'll just change everything to Jen Stevens, mom and wife.
I think that would be revolting.
Yeah, I think that would be the end of our friendship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we start, one of the little icebreakers I usually do is, do you remember how we met? Or when we met? Do you remember the moment we met? As our eyes locked across a crowded room.
Do I remember the moment we met? No.
Maybe I should have prepared you. No, but I mean, do you remember, do you remember the first time you were aware of me? Because I'm not sure we would have met as such, but we would have been at things together.
No.
Because the first, okay, so
I'll
tell you.
Very badly.
No. The first time I remember, I think probably the first time we met properly was when I came into Tatler and I was doing some cover and we probably were introduced, but we were aware of each other, had seen each other at things before that.
No, I knew you before that.
Did you?
Yeah.
But the first time I was aware of you was, I think, a group of people went on some trip with Chanel.
Okay.
And I remember people talking about that they got to pick something up to a certain value. I think you got a necklace or something in this Chinese Whispers version of the story that I heard third or fourth or fifth hand.
Okay.
And this was when I became aware, like,
ah,
Jen Stevens important.
Yeah, I know the trip you're talking about. We did not get to pick something up to a certain value. Oh. We were given like a 15% discount in a Chanel store in London. Oh. We were told in advance we were getting it. I had some savings. I had a birthday coming up in about 5 months. So I asked, I don't know if Mick and I were married, but I asked my Mick for my birthday money. And then I went to my mother and asked her for some birthday money. And I pooled all the money to buy myself a set of pearls, which makes me seem less important now. And it was just my money with a very tiny discount.
It wasn't even your money. It was your birthday money from your mom.
It was literally savings and two birthday monies together and a tiny discount, which makes, I mean, I should have just stuck with your story is better, but
my story is better. Do you still wear them?
I have worn them once.
Oh. Well,
they're in a box.
You'll have them forever.
There's a lot. There's some stuff in my house, which is forever stuff, which is pointless and was probably a waste of money. But, you know,
I think everybody has forever stuff that's pointless and maybe a waste of money, though.
Yeah.
But still kind of love.
Also, I feel like whenever you're offered a discount in Chanel, you should just go and buy something iconic, which is what I did.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'm glad that made you think that I was important.
That's a really important life lesson for everyone. If ever you're offered a discount in Chanel, buy something timeless.
These are the important messages I'm going to pass on to my daughter.
Tell me about your career in media, because so up until now, kind of the last thing or the last job, like full time that you had was editor of Irish Country magazine. Mm-hmm. But what was the journey like up until then?
So I have been a journalist for almost 20 years because I am very aged. Of those 20 years, I have been a magazine editor for 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so annoying. Sorry.
I was annoying at the time. So I did a degree in journalism in Griffith College because I didn't do very well in my leaving cert. I thought I was first of all going to be an actress, which didn't pan out. Then, as you can hear from my speech impediment, then I did very badly in my leaving cert. And I think I got into like cultural studies in Turman Fechan or something. which would have qualified me to be a dancer in Bunratty Castle. And my dad didn't want me to do that. Surprisingly, he came home with a tiny piece of newspaper cut out one day and said, I think you should do, I'll pay for you to do this course. You've always liked making stuff up, which was his definition of being a journalist, obviously.
I mean, I would just like to point out now, before we go any further, no offence to anyone who has gone to Griffith College or is a dancer in Bunratty Castle. Just to be clear, we are not, well, Jen might be, but I'm not shading you. Those are perfectly valid life choices.
No, and actually, now that I look back, I would have given anything to be a dancer in Bunratty Castle because it would have been a lovely life.
But it would have been a short-lived career.
Oh, why?
Because female dancers don't get to be female dancers for that long.
Well, actually,
you fuck your knee and then you put on weight and then you're fucked.
No, it's true. And I did ballet for very many years and I do have very bad knees and very bad toes as a result. So I went to Griffith. And this is a fun fact. Rosie McNeil, who up until very recently was the editor of Image, was in my class. So two of Ireland's magazine editors were in the same class.
Together.
We came up together. When I finished college, I applied. No, I got a temp job in a company called PostGem, which was an on-post company that had a website. And nobody knew anything about websites at the time. And it makes me sound very old. It's not that long ago. Huh. And I was doing sort of data entry, which I was really bad at. And I did incorrectly. And I most definitely messed up a lot of on-post files. Like, definitely. But I had heard somewhere in the kitchen or something that they had this website and they were trying to figure out a way of putting like articles onto it. So I was 21, I think, and really just stupid. And I just went into a woman who I thought might be in charge of the website. She was the CEO of the company, which I did not realize. And I said, hey, I think you're trying to get articles onto like a website or something. And I can do that because I'm a journalist. And she was like, are you though? And then she said, what do you do here? And I said, oh, I'm a temp. I'm doing like some stupid data entry thing. And she was just looking at me like, what is wrong with you? You're speaking to a CEO. But told me I could have the job. And I went and joined the web dev, which is what they were called at the time, the web dev team, who were deadly. And I had a brilliant time. Ended up being like the editor of Ireland Online, which was one of the first portals in the country. Then that got bought out and became part of oceanfree.net, which was a lot of people's first email address.
You're ringing all the retro bells now.
Yeah, and I became kind of, I think it was deputy commissioning editor of that. And then it got all bought by Dennis O'Brien and ESAT. And at some stage or another, I was the commissioning editor of oceanfree.net and Ireland Online. And I was like 22. And then they were offering voluntary redundancy, which sounded like free money. And I thought, amazing, free money. And so I applied for it and they gave it to me and I got this free money. And I had always wanted to work in magazines. And I said, OK, I'm going to go work in magazines now. But I had been paid what I thought was an astronomical amount of money there, something like 24,000. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was pounds or euros.
I think
euro,
that's like 125 in today. Yeah, I mean, grand a year.
I worked there as punts became euro and our money just seemed to double overnight and it was like this amazing time. I can't remember if that was like punts or euro, the 24,000. But anyway, I went and got a I did some work experience first for free, which I think I know it's a terrible dirty word now, but it was absolutely vital for me because although I had been working as a journalist and as a lofty title of commissioning editor, I didn't know what I was doing in terms of print. So I did a little bit of free work experience and then I got my first job for $9,000. So I had taken quite the pay cut.
I mean, the working for free thing is interesting because I think like when we think about the privilege or the at least geographical privilege and also financial privilege you have to be able to work for free.
Yeah.
It kind of explains why Ireland's media landscape is so white and middle class.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But I mean,
no, I didn't work for a very prolonged period of time for free. Yeah. It wasn't like it is now where interns are there for 6 months or a year. Yeah. I think I did 2, 3 or 4 week stints in places. Okay.
A friend of mine did 9 months.
Yeah.
And it was when they were doing JobBridge. And she now, I think kind of 2 years later, 3 years later, maybe can't get the dole or can't get some benefit because she hasn't paid enough stamps, essentially, because she was on JobBridge.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird and awful catch 22 that she's like, well, I did what you wanted me to do, what you were saying when you wanted us to get back into work.
Yeah.
And now you're punishing me for it. Anyway, sorry, do go on.
Anyway, so I did that. I got this job for $9,000. So I started working for a company called Difflin, which don't exist now, but exist as 256 Media.
Oh, yes. What titles did they have at the time? Did they have Prudence at the time?
I started as a editorial assistant and I worked on House and Home magazine and on Confetti. Confetti was being launched, so I worked on the very first issue of that. And I was super excited, couldn't believe my luck. loved it, absolutely adored it. But I was in a hurry and I saw a job being advertised in U Magazine. All the jobs, I think, were being advertised in U Magazine. All the team who happened to leave and all the jobs were advertised. And I was like, oh my God, I would absolutely love to work in U Magazine. It was part of Smurfit Publications at the time and I just thought it would be amazing. And I went in and interviewed and did not get it, did not get any of the jobs at all. And about 2 weeks later, I got a phone call saying, could you come back in? There's another job that we think you might be good for. And it was deputy editor, which I was like, what? Of Woman's Way. I said, sure, I'll come in. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Went in, got that job and had my foot in the door of Smurfit, which was just everything I'd ever wanted. And working on Woman's Way, I mean, was the best training ever. It's weekly. It's all of womankind reads it and writes in and has an opinion. So you like it was just I did everything. I shot covers. I read people's wills that got sent in. I answered questions.
Why do people's wills get sent in?
Oh, listen, some of it was. I mean, you know, it was how many years ago is it? Like 16, 17 years ago. It was a different time in that. People weren't Googling stuff all the time. And if you were elderly and you bought Woman's Way or the RT Guide every week, these were people you felt you knew. Mm. And so they often, like, women sent in medical reports and was like, what does this mean? Like, and you'd have to write back and say, how did you get this? You shouldn't have got this without going to your doctor. You need to bring it to your doctor. Like, really trying to explain. And wills got sent in. Like, everything got sent in.
I remember doing doing cover for Tatler for a couple of weeks. And the Woman's Way team were still at that was probably 8 years ago, were still getting like mass cards and rosary beads from women.
Yeah, and miraculous medals.
Just to say they were thinking of them.
Yeah, or if you had written something that they were really unhappy with, you know, or thought you would like go to hell for, you would get a medal,
Oh, when I worked at the Irish Times, if you wrote something they disagreed with, you did not get a medal. You just got a really...
No, like a miraculous medal.
Oh, like, no,
I
know.
You needed
but
to
like,
rub for God the genie to appear from and grant you your wishes. I mean, it was...
But like, I didn't get anything. I used to just get like angrily handwritten letters. And you always knew when a letter was handwritten that they were angry.
Oh, yeah. So taking the time to sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Woman's... Yeah, that was... Woman's Way was brilliant.
What titles were in Smurfit at that point?
So Smurfit was Woman's Way, Irish Tatler, U Magazine, Food and Wine...
Tatler Man, was that around then or was that
Tatler Man
later?
Didn't exist, no. Okay. And then their website was called iVenus.com.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember. It used to be great for competitions.
A lot of
competitions on iVenus. Never won a thing.
It was brilliant. It was a brilliant place to work. It was like full of great characters. It was really entertaining. When I was on Woman's Way, it was just before kind of the boom. And it was produced in a very old school way. You got all of your images on a slide, which were called trannies. So you got sent in trannies.
Like transparencies?
And every page had an envelope. So you put in a piece of paper that explained where the designer could find the words that you'd written. Your tranny, your two trannies went into the envelope. It was all done like that. You filed your envelope into a folder on a desk and the designer would come and pick up a job and do
it. Yeah. Different now. It's all done by robot, of course.
To print or press pass a magazine, you used to have to go out to Smurfit Printing in Glasnevin, which I think is 154 bed houses now, and actually watch the magazine go by on the printers. Yeah, it was really, I mean, it was a different time. You also had to collect all the trannies and send them back to the PR people, which was the worst job ever because you'd always lose a couple of trannies along the way. Can I say tranny again? It seems a lot of trannies in that sentence.
I mean, yeah, like I think it's in this context
fine.
I mean, people don't use it in your everyday speech,
not in your everyday but. Yeah, so I was on Woman's Way for a little while when the job of editor of Irish Tatler came up, which was a reach for me but something that I really wanted. I was very ambitious and I think I had the kind of sort of cocky stupidity of a 25-year-old, you know. So I decided to go for it. And I was given an interview, which I was very excited about. Smurfit had been taken over at that stage by Nora Casey. And I, for that interview, I probably worked harder for that interview than I've worked in any job even that I've ever had. I had the most amazing presentation, Mock magazine. Like I had the works. I just really, really did it. I really wanted to get it and I really did it.
It sounds like 13 going on 30, you know, and she's like, I have this great idea. And she comes up with this terrible magazine cover. Sorry, go on. I'm sure it was really good, though.
I mean, look, I don't know if it was really good, but I really, it was clear how much I wanted it. Yeah. And I had put a lot of work into it. Anyway, I got the job, bizarrely. And when Nora told me I got the job, she told me, you know, I gave you a courtesy interview because you work here already. So I thought you should have an interview. But like, I was being polite giving you one. She said it just goes to show like the value of a really good interview, a really good presentation. Like, you really impressed everybody and we're going to give you the job. Now, I don't think I had thought far enough beyond actually getting the job because I was floored. I didn't, like, I couldn't breathe for about 8 months. Like, it was terrifying. I was terrified. I was barely 26 and I was the editor of Irish Chatter. And, like, to say I was in over my head is, you know, just such a massive understatement. But listen, the boom coincided with getting the job and I took advantage of it and had a ball.
And what was, I mean, so I know you mentioned you went from $9,000.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me specifically what the wages were like, but like, what was the money like in media back then? Like, was it good when it was the boom or was it still a bit shit?
No, I mean, magazines were never amazing money, ever. I can't remember exactly what was on in Irish Chatler, but like, God, I'd say, I'm trying to think. From Irish Chatler, like, Irish Chatler was the dream job and I was in it 2 years when I got a phone call from a man in the Evening Herald. Would I come and meet them? And I went and met them and they offered me a job and they offered me a newspaper salary. Mm. And you could have knocked me down with a feather. Like, it was probably close to double the money.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, maybe the editor of Irish Chatler, maybe I was on like $32,000 or something, you know, like it was, it can't have been a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was really young. All of my socialising was free because it was all to do with work.
Yeah. And you were probably getting really good freebies as well.
I mean, the freebies were good, but they weren't anything like the freebies that you see going around now.
They were around influencer world now.
Or even media. Like, it just wasn't the same. Like, it was, you weren't like,
well, there wasn't as much. I mean, and I think as well, a lot of UK companies hadn't really started reaching out to Ireland. Because that kind of was starting when I was at the Times, where there was a lot of Irish PR companies who repped UK brands and stuff. But it was only in the last, like within the last 10 years, I think, that brands like NARS started coming over and having meetings and giving you like 120 quids worth of pallets in a goodie bag. You know what I mean? That's not that old.
A couple of the companies, like Chanel used to always come, but like that was a huge thing. Like, you wouldn't have had very many more. Like L'Oreal Luxury, which looked after Lancome and Armani, had a base here and a marketing person here who was lovely. But it just wasn't the same at all as it is now.
Mm.
But look, you know, there were really cool parties. My dinner would almost always, like, you know, cocktail sausages somewhere.
You all partied is what you're trying to say.
We went out all the time.
Yeah. Have you read the Vanity Fair diaries?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, what's her name? I'm having a total blank about her name.
Anyway,
it doesn't matter. It's the former editor of the Vanity Fair, who was editor of Vanity Fair for years, whose name I know but cannot now remember. I'll put it in the show notes. But in this book where she's writing essays, it's excerpts from her diary.
Her diary at the time,
Vanity Fair. And they were paying like $12,000 for a feature. Now, like, some of their features were taking 3 months because it was like, oh, we've commissioned this feature from Hunter S. Thompson, who's going to travel across America.
I mean, I know, but whenever you look at Carrie Bradshaw and you think,
oh, I know,
you know, whatever she was getting paid per word when she, you know, got the job in Vogue, like freelance work in Vogue, the stage is always being a beast of its own. London, working in magazines in London was always a different thing.
Yeah.
In Ireland, you were like, Irish Chatler was a really fancy, glossy magazine and there were three of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and there are still only three on our show.
A couple of people. Like, it's not like the UK or the US at all.
We used to talk about that when I worked at Stellar. We'd open up a copy of Elle and like bitterly read out the names of everybody who worked on it.
But also,
they have this person, they have this person. Oh my God, they have somebody who does this.
They would be so bored. Your job is like a page or half a page a month that you look after.
I don't know. Like, as somebody who's decided she doesn't really like working that much, I don't think I'd be bored. I think I'd be delighted. I'd be like, this is great.
Yeah, fair enough.
So sorry. So you went to the Herald then, and like,
So then I went to the Herald as an assistant news editor. So I used to have to be at my desk at 5:20 a.m. because the Herald at the time was the Evening Herald. So it came out at 1 o'clock. Okay. So you would go to work very early. I'd be at my desk at 5:20 and somebody would inevitably be shouting at me by 5:45.
So you love that.
I did and I didn't. But I didn't stay that long. People often think that women's magazines are a toxic place to work, but they're not. And loads of my really good friends, some of my best friends, are women that I met working in magazines. Always found it to be a really lovely, collaborative, supportive place to work. Did not find the same in a male-dominated, crime-driven newspaper.
It's really interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody recently, or I was eavesdropping probably at work, and somebody was talking about female bosses. And you know this kind of trope of like, oh, women can be like terrible bosses, they can be bitches or whatever. And they were like, why is it that women are not great at helping other women? Or there's something. And I kind of said, well, if you think about it, if you're working in a male-dominated industry, it looks to you like if there's going to be a woman in the higher echelons, there's only going to be one. You know what I mean? That you know they're not going to suddenly let five women be on the board, like, and one man. So if you're succeeding in a male-dominated industry, you're conditioned, and you are correct, to think that there isn't space for a whole lot of women up at the top.
Yeah.
So you have to be competitive. Whereas I found that the same in magazines, in women's magazines specifically, where there were nearly all women working together and for each other. And, you know, there were women who were in charge and there were women who were at the very bottom.
Yeah.
It was such a kind and thoughtful and supportive environment. And obviously you get the odd person you don't get on with, and that's life. But like, it was such a different, because I mean, I've done some shifts at the Star as well. And like, I worked at the Times for years, but there was something so, and I mean, like I've worked in retail as well, but it's kind of different. There was something in women's magazines when you're writing about and thinking about and talking to women all day long and you're writing for women.
Yeah.
It's such a different and special place.
Yeah. I mean, look, inevitably there's going to be people along the way that you don't get on with because people have personalities.
You're human,
You're human. In newspapers as well, you know, I just think, you know, people can be lovely and people can be pricks.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the way it goes. I don't know if it's necessarily because the paper was made, like, there were loads of women working there, but it was a very old, it's different now. I know it's different in there now. It was a very old school environment at the time. It hadn't moved forward yet. And it was a stressy kind of situation because everybody's there at a really weird, like, you're having your lunch at 9 o'clock and you're finished your day and in the pub at like one, and everyone was in the pub. So there was, you know, it was a real old school newspaper thing going on. Tina Brown is the woman from Vanity.
Yes. You are correct.
My brain is just working in the background. So I was there about 10 months in the Herald. I decided to leave and go freelance, which I did. Turns out going freelance for me is just planning elaborate meals to cook. Wasn't great for me. I went in and met Richard Hannaford, he's sadly passed away now. He was Nora's husband and he was the editorial director at that stage. She had bought the company out and they were Harmonia now. And they wanted to take You magazine, which I had interviewed for all those years ago and not gotten. They wanted to take that from a monthly magazine to a fortnightly magazine, which, having just come from 10 months of daily writing and editing, was easy.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I would do that, but I would just do it on a contract basis. I absolutely wasn't coming back full time. And I stayed there 7 years.
And were you on a contract the whole time?
No, after a certain amount of time, Richard said, what are you doing on a contract? I was like, well, I'm not staying. He's like, are you sure you're not staying? I was like, okay, yeah, I'll stay for a while. So I went back full time, but I ended up staying for 7 years, which is the longest I had stayed in any job ever. But I loved it. It was the best job I had. It was the best girls. It was the best team. Over the course of working in UMag, some of my team was Sean O'Halloran, who went on to become the editor of Irish Chatler. Martha Connolly, who went on to become the editor of VIP. Faye McGillicuddy, who is the fashion journalist and now works in Hunter PR. Ashlyn Keenan, who everyone knows from online stuff. Lorna McGinn, who's now the social media director of a big digital marketing company. Like, I had the best people over the course of that. Denise, who now works in Google. Like, brilliant people, amazing people. The best team ever. We had O'Neve Ryan, who is still the sales director in Harmonia and is the best crack in the whole world. Like, it was the best team. We had the best time. It was so much fun. It was before the internet ruined celebrity gossip forever, so we could write stuff.
Oh yeah, of course, and it was still news.
Yeah, we had amazing, we had hilarious covers, like with featuring like when Ronan Keating had his bit of marriage difficulty. Like we had amazing, like we had some brilliant celebrity stories and stuff to write about, and it was the crack. And then there came a point where I realised 7 years was a long time, and
In media, I should specify, because like that's something that I've found really hard coming out of media, to see friends of mine who are nurses or teachers or, you know, quote unquote normal jobs. I mean, media is a normal job, but like I'm always asking. So a friend of mine's a teacher and she's been teaching at this school since she qualified, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm always kind of going, would you move to another school? And she's like, no, why would I do that? And I'm just like,
how are you not boring? Are you
mind? Yeah, you've been there for 8 years. And obviously it's like, that's different because it's different kids and it's different things every day. And but I just like, because media, it's so normal that you would be somewhere for two or three or four. And I mean, you know what? Like in media, there are people who've been places for 25 years as well, in papers more specifically.
Well, I mean, papers are different. I think when you're in a magazine, everything is cyclical and you end up writing the same story.
Yeah.
And maybe every 3 years, you know, a trend will come and you'll be like, oh my God, like florals for spring, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
You know,
I've been here too long.
You will start to eye roll at yourself and it will be time to move on. And also, if you're always like, I think a good editor as well, you have to know when it's time, when you're slightly bored and you're not giving the best to the audience that are buying the publication, or you've aged out of the market, which is definitely a thing.
Was that something you felt?
I don't know if I felt that I had aged out of the market, but I probably had got to the point where I had given it all I could give it.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a really exciting time. I had completely changed it, completely changed the magazine. It had been like a kind of a, you know, you're a women's monthly magazine, and it changed into this kind of fortnightly, fun, irreverent, more celebrity focused thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably see the tide changing in terms of how the internet was affecting the stories that we were writing. And I wasn't sure how to deal with that without completely changing it again. And I thought, if someone's going to completely change it again, it should be someone new.
Yeah, I get you.
Not me.
But like maybe it needs a fresh pair of eyes.
Like
to I
already changed it once into something brilliant. You know, it was the top selling magazine years and years and years in a row. Like it had done amazingly well. But I thought it was probably time to change it. And then it should be someone else to do that.
Yeah.
And it should be, I should have gone. So I did. And I went to Irish Country Magazine, which is produced by the Farmers Journal. And it was a whole new prospect. It was back to monthly. It is a very Irish supportive magazine, which I absolutely loved. I created when I was there, like the Irish Maid Awards, and it just really...
The Irish what awards?
Irish Maid.
Oh, so, I thought you meant MAID for a second.
No.
And I was like, what? What's an Irish Maid?
Supporting the women who clean up in Ireland.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
No, it's nice. Producers and craftspeople and designers.
Yes. And I mean, like, I have been aware of the Irish Maid Awards. I don't know why my brain went there.
Like just such a lovely supportive magazine, and we did some amazing covers, and just got to do Celia Holman Lee was one of my biggest selling covers. Like she, and she's so cool and so amazing. Like, and women love her. I did Olivia Tracy Came Home from California to do a cover. Like just brilliant things that were slightly different, and I was really excited by again. And I hadn't been shooting a lot.
Oh,
like,
for you, photographically, it was less,
photographically, not like gun. For you, Mag. So yeah, no, it was.
What was your favorite cover when you were in Irish Adler or Irish Country magazine? Yeah.
I mean, my first one was Roz Purcell up the Dublin Mountains, with her hair really curly, looking like such a wild colleen. It was brilliant.
It was
I loved
beautiful.
It.
Yeah.
We shot Faye Dinsmore on Hornhead in Donegal. And in a magical forest where she just looked like this pixie queen. It was just in Arran. It was amazing. Olivia Tracy Coming Home. And Olivia Tracy is the coolest woman ever. She was brilliant. I loved shooting. We had Celia Holman Lee in a rowboat on a lake in Tipperary, which was brilliant. We did the first Irish-American one. We shot Sarah Rafferty from Suits in Toronto, which was a pretty cool thing to go and do.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved them all. We had, like, it was brilliant. It was just... Everyone, every cover. Like, we did loads of first covers as well. We had Muireann O'Connell on her first cover. Like, just it was...
Muireann O'Connell, the hardest working woman in Ireland.
The hard and, like, the most crack. She is the
She's
most
so
crack.
Fun. But I honestly, sometimes I see her because she presents a radio show and she presents the 6 o'clock show on TV3, or Virgin Media One.
Yeah, I think they finish like an hour apart as well. Like, it's
every
really...
single fucking day.
Yeah, no, she's brilliant.
And I just don't understand how she's still...
Upright?
Yeah. Like the concept of it.
Yeah.
If somebody said to me, can you do like Myrna Collins' job for 2 weeks? I'd be like, absolutely not. There's not enough money in the world. I would die of like stress.
I know, yeah.
She's amazing.
She's so cool. Her mom is really cool. Her brother is incredibly hot. If anyone, I think he's Googled a lot now as well.
Why? Have you mentioned this before?
We wrote about him in the piece, but she only said a couple of weeks ago that her brother is like, I can't remember how she knows, but it's a massive Google search now. He is really hot.
What age is he? He's a single?
I can't give you any of these details, but
okay,
you can Google him.
I can just add.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
To the high Google number search for Myrna Collins' brother.
Yeah, so that was Irish Country Mag. Brilliant, amazing job. I won Editor of the Year when I was there, which had eluded me for 14 years.
Oh, that's kind of annoying. You feel like as well in Irish media sometimes, would you not just give it, you know what I mean? Like everybody should get a go.
Yeah, but maybe that was my go, so don't take that away from me.
Oh yeah, sorry. Thanks. But at the same time, so you were at Irish Country Magazine, mm-hmm. you were shooting all these covers, you were travelling around. But there was also something else, like from the personal point of view, you were trying to have a baby.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was like,
what was I doing?
I was looking at you like, where is this going? I was trying to have a baby. Yes, I was trying to have a baby. I had been trying to have a baby when I was in you as well.
Oh, really? I always think trying to have a baby is like such a funny phrase because
I think ostensibly knows what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean,
it wasn't going well, reader, listener.
Yeah. But you know, like if I say to my friend, so like, are you trying to have a baby?
Yeah.
Also, what I'm saying is, are you having a lot of sex? You're doing it all the time.
Or maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe are you just doing it like every second day for like 6 days and then not at all for, you know,
I thought it had to be every
days.
Day. Like for, like somebody tell me that for doctors to believe that you're really trying, it has to be every day.
Doctors don't want it to be every day because the poor sperm needs some recoup time. So...
The poor sperm, rolling my eyes, the poor sperm.
Every second day or third day is better.
So how long had you been trying to conceive for?
I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, trying to conceive. I was pregnant 4 times before I had this baby. So we suffered multiple pregnancy loss. So 4 miscarriages in just over 4 years. And it's okay, you don't have to say it like that.
No,
okay.
But I mean, just like that's so difficult. That's such a difficult thing to go through in such a short space of time. To go through it over and over again.
Yeah. No, not great at all. And probably some of the reason that I stayed at you maybe slightly longer than I had been initially planning, because you keep thinking you're going to be pregnant and...
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course, yeah.
And then I took the leap and left anyway. I actually think I only had 1 miscarriage when I was working in you. I think the rest of them were... Anyway, so multiple pregnancy loss, which is difficult. And most people didn't know. So it was usually going on at work without people knowing.
Mm.
I told my team about the last 2 because they were very hard ones. I was hospitalized 2 and I had to keep going back in. One of them was a particularly difficult situation where my hormone levels weren't dropping and I had to go back in constantly for blood tests. They wouldn't discharge me fully until your hormones have dropped back down. So I had to tell them something, you know, they knew something was going on. And eventually I just had to say, look, this is what's happening. It's a really difficult situation. I'm sorry to burden you with the information, but you're just going to have to give me a little bit of a dig out here. I can't just hide it and do it all.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant about it. They were amazing. That's what was going on for about just over 4 years. And then in September 2017, At the National Ploughing Championships, I realised I was pregnant.
At the ploughing. Did you, like, were you suddenly standing there going, I haven't had my period?
I was thinking, I was like, did I have my period? Something happened. Did I? And it didn't really carry on. And on the way home, stopped off and bought a pregnancy test and went home and was like, oh, no, I am. I'm pregnant. Oh, my God. And then immediately just was thinking, oh, I wonder how long this will go on.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask. That, like, what's it like then being pregnant after a multiple pregnancy loss? Like, do you spend the entire 9 to 10 months in a state of,
yeah,
I don't want to say fear, but kind of waiting for it to be over? You know,
oh no, it's fear. It's absolutely fear. The longer that the pregnancy was sticking around, the more fearful I became. I can't speak for him, but I think it was the same. But the more fearful we became, until I think our consultant, I can't remember how many weeks we were. We were maybe 15 or 16 weeks. And she was like, guys, this, you're just like everyone else now. This is fine. You're fine.
At what stage had you experienced the pregnancy losses before?
They were similar stages. So between like 7 and 11 weeks. Okay. But then like a couple of them with the hormones and stuff, the hospital visits and stuff would carry on till maybe 15 or 16 weeks anyway, okay, you know. So, but we knew where we were.
At which
we
point knew you was, knew it was
oh,
over,
we knew it was already over, yeah, yeah. But you were just still, you just couldn't get out of the hospital. It was just so annoying. Like, it was annoying. Yeah. Then you're like, I just need this to be done so that I can move on again. Yeah, it's terrifying. It's really difficult. Like, she had to have a word with us and say, and we knew her really well. We had been seeing her. There's a miscarriage clinic in the Rotunda, and we had been attending her in the miscarriage clinic, and she had been with us for one of them, for the last miscarriage. And so we were on this pregnancy just back with her in the miscarriage clinic. And then there came a point where she was like, do you want to come and see me in my private rooms? Which made me think, oh my God, I think this is going to be okay. She's never suggested this before. And we did. We started going to see her in her own rooms. And then she had to have a word with us at about 16 weeks, I think, going, listen, it's fine. You're going to be fine. It's okay. It's going to be okay.
And did you believe her?
No, not at all. Absolutely not. I think I was fine. Not fine, but I think I was better. I think I thought it was all going to be okay at about 24 weeks. I think I had read something that was like, they can keep them alive. Mm. If anything happens now, they can keep it alive. So I think, yeah, from probably about then, I started to relax a little bit. And then we found out the gender as well. So once that happened, I was like, oh no, I gave her a name then. And I just was like, no, this is fine. She's real now. I know who she is. It's absolutely fine. She's definitely coming.
Yeah.
She's definitely coming. I wrote her name down over and over again. I have pads and pads of just her name written out over and over. And I was like, I can see her. I can see her. She's coming. I know she's coming.
Do you think someday, like when she's 18 or 19, she'll find these and be like, my mom's a psychopath. She's been writing my name. Like, you know, she won't know when you did it. She'll be like, oh my God, when did mom scribble my name over and over and over?
She has an email address that I keep sending her emails to. So she will already know that her mom is a psychopath.
Do you send her emails? Like, I think that's a really cute idea. But do you ever send her emails when you're like, you were a dickhead yesterday and I didn't sleep at all?
No.
Or are they all nice?
No, they're mainly only videos of her. They're mainly just videos like, oh, this is you and your dad. This is the first day you were laughing and this is you laughing at your dad. Like, they're very sweet. But like, it's sort of like a Richard Curtis film. I know I'm going to be dead and she'll be crying reading these or something like that. I can see Donald Gleason playing somebody in this awful film.
He'd be too old.
No, he'll be her dad or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair.
Yeah, it'll be like a female version of About Time or something where you keep flashing
really
back to me.
I really enjoyed that film.
Yeah, you keep flashing back to me going, this is you laughing with your daddy.
And
Hugh Grant will be in it somewhere for sure.
So I know everybody says, right, that you can never be prepared for the arrival of, you know, like no matter what you read or no matter what do you feel that in any way? Like, were you still shocked when she arrived and you were like, oh my God, what the fuck do I do with this baby? Or had, because you'd been trying for so long and you'd had those pregnancy losses, did that in any way prepare you more? Or were you still like, fuck?
Your first baby is a shit show. Like, it is very hard. I have been around babies and kids. Like, I was an au pair. There's 11 nieces and nephews on Mick's side. There's 9 on my side. Oh. Like, I was a professional babysitter from
the
age of 14.
And I still forget all their birthdays.
No, I was a professional babysitter from about 14. Like, I am a pro.
Professional babysitter from 14. You were a child.
Listen.
It's mad to think about now. Would you let a 14-year-old mind your baby?
Nah, it depends on the 14-year-old. Like, I was
I think you'd want it to be 17 at least.
Listen, they used to, drunk men used to give me a pat on the arse and put me in taxis home. Mm. Like, when, it's fine.
You're lucky. Drunk men used to drive me home.
Listen, and like, give me 10 or 20 pounds, which I thought was a fortune. 15-year-olds are getting 50 quid a night now.
I used to get 50 euro a night.
Did
from
you?
My rich neighbours. They had a tennis court.
Kildare is very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very good with babies. You know, I can change a nappy, I can swaddle, I can put them to sleep, I can do all that. I mean, it's the lack of sleep.
Yeah.
That will drive you to the edge of reason. I mean, nothing can prepare you for that.
I was literally just talking about, like, this is not the same. But I was chatting to people because this morning when we're recording this, darkness into light happened this morning, where people get up at an ungodly hour and walk from darkness into light in Ada Pieta House, which is an incredible cause.
Yeah.
Great, right? But people kept asking me, would I do it? And I was like, I'm mentally ill already. Like, I'm not adding getting up at 4 a.m. I cannot cope with getting up at 4 a.m. I got up at 4 a.m. last week for the airport and it ruined my entire, like, one day. I flew over and back to London in one day, and literally for the rest of the week I was like, what day is it? What time is it time to get up? I was ruined. And I was so depressed. Like, I was really, really down for the whole week because I was just so tired.
Yeah, don't have a kid, Rosemary.
Yeah, I know. So it's not at all like that. But I believe you when you say the sleeplessness is what does it for you.
May woke every 2 hours until, I think, 18 weeks. Yeah, now, you're in a daze. You are in a daze.
I mean, the one good thing for me is... this isn't about me, but if it was about me, the one good thing for me would be I fall asleep really, really quickly. So, like, I can fall asleep within about 5 minutes.
No, I mean, yeah, that's not great, though, because
you're still awake feeding for 45 minutes.
Like, I fell asleep a couple of times with her feeding on my breast and then would wake in a jump and it would be like an hour and 50 minutes later and realise that the baby was still, like, face down on my boob, which is not, you know, the baby is fine, everyone. Which is, you know, not the greatest thing in the world, but you're so tired, you're so sleep deprived, you're so tired. And breastfeeding for me was relatively easy, so I would just clamp her on and then off and just nod off and then wake up a few minutes like, okay, you're fine. You're feeding,
Stop sleeping on the job.
You're fine. Yeah, but like, it was about every 2 hours for about 18 weeks, so like, full on.
Yeah.
And
I think when you say that, people and I forget that it's not that you wake up for 2 minutes and then go back to sleep for 2 hours. It's
you wake up, feed for
45
yeah,
minutes,
yeah,
then
yeah.
you might get an hour of sleep, if even.
And
45
that's,
minutes
and
sleep,
that is
and then
if
you're
you
up again.
Fall back asleep easily,
yeah.
Some people don't, and so there's not much sleep happening at all. And so that was about 18 weeks. And then if you think, like, people have some money, your social welfare money lasts for 24 weeks, but you... finish work 2 weeks before that. So the baby is 22 weeks when a lot of people have to go back to work, which is inhumane.
Yeah. My sister went back to work. I think I've probably mentioned this.
That's in America.
I know, 4 weeks after.
That is crazy.
I know. And she had a meeting in her house something like 3 days after her son was born. Like, the team came over to discuss something important. I'd murder them all.
If you're a freelancer, and there are loads of freelancers, like, they all go back to work really quickly. I know loads of Irish freelancers that go back to work really quickly. And
well,
I know
you have to.
Yeah, like, and I know you're working from home and stuff. You can be in your pajamas or whatever, which is what I'm doing most of the time now. But at that early stage, it's very difficult and you really are very tired, unless you have like a nanny that comes in. Like, my mom is older, so she wouldn't be coming down to the house to, you know, like, and also I don't really want them to be doing, like, the grandparents to be doing that. But unless you have like a brilliant mom who comes in every day and lets you have a nap or lets you have a shower, like, definitely there were days where I was showering at like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
If I could even manage to get myself around to doing that, you know, like, it's very hard.
And those are things that I kind of have tried to say to my friends as well, that I'm like, if you want me to come and hold the baby for an hour and a half while you, like, take a shit and have a shower, like, I will do that. And that's something that I think we don't really think. Like, often we'll go, I'll come and visit you.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll come visit you. Like, when suits, I'll come over for coffee, instead of being like, here, what are you doing tomorrow? I'm going to come over for
I always arrive. I arrive with two dinners from Marks and Spencer's or Avoca. That you know, that are easily, that
you
require, yeah, but listen, that require just putting into it, you know, warming up, nothing that requires extra prep.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll say, do you need a shower? And I don't even, like, I think what you're doing is lovely. I don't even offer to you that. When I turn up, I just take the baby and say, do you need to have a shower or do you need to have a lie down and go and
wonder
do that
if they're now? Like, Jen's so weird. She just always walks in and takes the baby.
I mean, I think possibly. But you know what? For me, when people arrived and did that, I would go, actually, yeah, I could really just do with, like, even washing my hair, having a shower that was more than like 2 minutes long, like listening for a baby is amazing. So, but if people texted and offered to do it, I'd say, no, we're fine. Yeah, please come course. For coffee. Yeah, and then because I'm an absolute control freak, I would have baked something, cleaned the house, had the cafetiere ready to go, you know. Yeah. Instead of sitting on the couch and going, if you want tea, make tea.
But you do, like that's very Irish as well, to be like, of course I'll make you a cup of tea. No, you sit down, I'll do, you know what I mean? And so feel awkward about somebody doing that in your own home.
It is much better to have someone that barrels in.
Yeah, and just forces the issue.
Provided that you know them very, like, I would only do it to people I know very well.
Oh yeah, same. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, also by that same token, I have some friends who I think wouldn't appreciate it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Who have like family nearby and who'd be like, I don't need you to come, you're being weird.
Yeah.
But there are other people that I'm like, yeah, I'll come and, you know.
And you know who the people are. You know that need a bit of a...
you figure it out.
A dig out,
You mentioned there that you are now freelance and could sit in your pyjamas all day.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously made the decision not to go back to Irish Country Magazine. And when did you make that decision?
So I knew from the beginning that I was going to take the unpaid extra leave.
So that bring you from like 6 months to 9 months, kind of roughly, doesn't it?
To about 11 months.
Okay.
I was paid by my job for 14 weeks. So by the time May was 3 months old, my money had gone. Then you're on social welfare money in that last 24 weeks. I had saved and saved and saved. So I knew I had money to get me to the 10 or 11 months. I knew I wasn't going to go back after 6 months. And then when I got to 6 months, I was like, Jesus Christ, how do people go back? And I know loads of people do. And I know I'm coming from a position of immense privilege that I was able to take those extra unpaid months off. Absolutely. I know that people can't.
Yeah, but it's also really kind and important to acknowledge how difficult it is.
Yeah, really difficult
to go back at 6 months, like, because you're still,
I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have gone
not
back.
Even that you're wrecked, but like, you've gone through this huge life-changing physical and emotional ordeal.
I physically could not have left that baby at 6 months old. I couldn't have done it. She was tiny. I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have left her at 6 months old. And I knew that I was never going to go back at 6 months. I knew it was going to be 10 or 11 months. But I was certain I was going back. Certain.
Yeah.
There was no, I had even stopped my, I put money into a joint account every month. I had only paused that and had made
because
it.
Because you're waiting to go back to work.
Had made had put the date of restart, the first date I would get my salary back when I went back to work. Like, I was 100% sure I was not a stay-at-home mother type of person at all. My career was everything, everything. There was no, I am a magazine editor, there was nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is, and like, in a kind of pretty sad way, who I am, you know, like, and now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh my God, that's pathetic, like, who I am. But it had been for so long that it was who I was.
But I think as well, when you do something that's kind of creative, it can be very hard to separate that from your sense of self and your sense of value. Mm-hmm. And so it feels very much like you as a person and how you are valued and your sense of self is tied up with the work that you do and the content that you produce or, you know, what you're putting out in the world. I think that's totally understandable.
Yeah. And I think magazine editor is a kind of a dream job kind of thing.
Mm.
So people are like, oh, you know, people are always really interested and excited. It's not like, you know, saying I'm a financial controller, which is a brilliant job and paid way more than what I was paid. But, you know, like,
or like, I'm a fund accountant. And you're like, so you just do a lot of Excel.
There's a bit of glamour tied up in being a magazine editor. You know, like, it's bullshit, but whatever. It was very much who I was. And I was sure I was going to go back to doing it. And people, I mean, everyone is like, enjoy your maternity leave, take all of your maternity leave. But like, after 6 months, people are like, when are you going back to work? Are you going back at work soon? When are you going back to work? And it's like, no, I'm taking the extra time. Oh, good for, are you? Good for you. Oh, good for you. And you're like, oh, do you mean good for me? Or do you mean, oh my God, you're taking all that time off work? And then slowly I started to realize that I wasn't making a huge effort in finding a creche or a childminder. I had rung some creches. I had hung up on some creches. I had looked into childminders. I had done a little bit of work, but I really wasn't putting my heart into it. And we had a come to Jesus talk at home. And it came down to realizing that we had spent 5 years waiting for her to come. And did we want to hand her over?
Mm.
And the way our jobs both worked, my job was flexible but unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
So I could be some days at work at 8 o'clock in the morning and possibly able to come home at four, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of times a month, you know, maybe a little bit more than that, might be in London, Paris. I would definitely have to host a couple of events during evenings, and I would normally have to be at the venue at like 4 o'clock. If they were in Dublin, they were often around the country. And the way Mick works, the earliest he can ever leave to get home is about 7 o'clock. So he would not ever, and that's not a movable feast. He just cannot in mm-hmm. his line of work. So he would never be available for a pickup in the evening.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out a way to make it work. And it was coming down to like a full-time childminder, but that was working extra hours, or a creche and a childminder. Or, I mean, and we had a dog and doggy daycare, this sounds ridiculous, that we had been managing for a very long time. But when there was a tricky evening, we could leave him at home with a toy in the garden. And as far as I know, you cannot leave a baby at home with a toy in the garden.
No, it's, I think they have to be at least 3.5.
It's like frowned upon. We couldn't figure out a way that that would work.
Mm.
And on a good week where nothing went wrong and I had no events and no travel, we were looking at dropping her off at 8 in the morning and picking her up very close to 6:30.
Hmm.
Which I know a lot of people do all of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't see us doing it.
But also, I guess a lot of people do that and they feel like they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Whereas in your line of work, there was a choice open to you, I guess, to go, I could. Like, there's always, like, when you work in media, there's always, I could go freelance. Like,
yeah.
Not that it's like an easy choice or an easy way to make your money, or that you're not going to be chasing invoices 3 days a week.
Yeah. No, I mean, but again, it comes from a place of privilege. Absolutely. There are people that have to, both parents have to go out and work in order to pay the mortgage, work full time and kill themselves, you know, work really hard to pay the mortgage. We were, you know, I worked out what I would need to make a week in order for us to be fine. I still had a bit of money. And then what happened was I got an offer of a big project that came along just as my maternity leave was ending. I knew that that money would see me through a certain period of time. It's going to be really hard to do the project. May was still tiny, you know, I had no childcare, try and work it all out, but I did. And that gave me the boost and the confidence to say, you know what,
I could do this.
I'm not going back.
Yeah.
And it was only when I had May that I realized that I had been, you know, keep on keeping on for 5 years. And it was only when she arrived that I went, I am back to who I was 5 years ago. And I think for the last 4.5 years, I've been a shell of who I was. I know I didn't go to loads of things. I know I skipped out on family events. I know I checked out a lot because I was trying to keep myself going.
So you're having a hard time.
I had,
basically.
And I don't even know if I realized, I thought I was doing a really good job of just getting on with things.
Yeah.
And actually I probably was doing a shit job of it. And I can only see that now.
Mm.
And just, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take a minute and step away from this and figure it all out and be with her. You know, she's all I wanted for these last 5 years. She's here now. I'm not handing her over for like 10 hours a day. I'm just going to try and do it. And you know what? Freelancing with her is not easy. It's quite difficult.
Yeah.
But Jesus, it's brilliant. You know, it's amazing, and it's amazing not having to get up and go anywhere, you know, and hand her over. But it was probably the hardest decision I've ever made, and it took me months to make it, and I cried a lot at the thought of giving up my job, my career, like part of me, basically.
That's an interesting turn of phrase when you said that you cried a lot at the thought of giving up your career.
Mm.
Do you feel as if you've given up your career?
Yeah.
So what are you doing now? Because you're still working.
So I'm working. But I'm freelancing.
But is it just that the career that you thought you would have has kind of come to an end and now there's a different phase of your life.
Yeah, like I was really ambitious. I, you know, was a really young editor, really worked my way up, worked for everything. I, you know, worked in every publication I wanted to work in, got every job I wanted to get, really had built myself up. All the magazines I worked for had won awards at one time or another, you know. And it was, you know, my career was everything. And yeah, I know I have. I've given up my career. I have. Now, maybe not forever.
Yeah.
At all. And maybe there'll be a new career. But for the time being, like, I am literally doing enough now to get enough money week by week to just be fine.
To live. Yeah. Yeah.
I am now, you know, I'm not living to work at all. At all.
But you're also not, which sounds like the first time for you, you're not working to get somewhere. You know what I mean?
No,
you've all along been working to get to the next level.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not doing that. No, I mean, I do. I really, it's a really hard thing to say. I think I've given up my career for now.
Mm.
I think maybe in 3 years when she gets, you know, her free crash place and, you know, I think maybe I'll pick something up then and I'll probably at that stage or even maybe before that be ready to dip in and do, you know, start again, do something else, maybe, you know. But for now, I am looking after my baby and working a bit to get a bit of money.
Yeah. And I mean, also, like, we should absolutely acknowledge, and I should absolutely acknowledge as somebody who is childless, that you're not, I mean, because the way we've been talking about it a little bit is kind of, you've given up your career and now you're doing like a little bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
But actually now your full-time job is stay-at-home mom. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? That's a fucking full-time job and then you're doing a Nixer on the side.
And like I'm definitely working, you know, some evenings. I've worked in the evenings, I've worked on the weekends. You know, that big project that I got, I was, you know, it was full on working Saturdays and Sundays, you know, so May could spend time with her dad and I would just be working and working and working, you know, which meant that I was working late nights, weekends, so more than 7 days, you know, more than most people you know, because she wouldn't be an amazing napper. It would be 40 minutes at a time. So it's a full day minding her. Look, I'm not down a mine.
No, of course. And I mean, look, like anything we talk about, somebody's got it worse. Somebody's working harder. Yeah. Somebody's like,
yeah. But you know, but being at home with a baby is definitely a full-time job.
Yeah,
it is definitely a full-time job. And then I am doing some work on top of that to earn some money. So yeah, that's true. Yeah. It is very true.
There was a really interesting project. I think I heard of it at either on the Hilo or on Call Your Girlfriend, where a woman in the States sent a bill to Congress for all of the unpaid hours she put into to caring for her child. And I think she did it like she compared it to her husband's. She was basically, she only billed for the extra hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That she did it like above and beyond.
Yeah.
And it was really like, it worked out something like 90 hours a week or 95 hours a week. It was insane.
I mean, if I give it a lot of thought, I'm really annoyed at, you know, and I think every new mother, every new parent is really annoyed at the childcare situation in Ireland. Mm. Like, it is a shit show. Not enough is being done. And we have friends in Norway and they are like, it's an Irish guy married to a Norwegian girl and they have two kids and they are incredulous at how crappy it is here. But, you know, TDs don't give a shit. Like,
no.
So it's not going to change.
I recently had to fill out a survey in work, well, in my work until the end of the month, where it was talking about workplace conditions.
Hmm.
And they put in a box saying, would you suggest anything to improve employment or, you know, to improve working conditions? And I was kind of there, like, because I listen to Call Your Girlfriend a lot and they talk a lot about work and a lot about women in work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, like, what could I say here that would really help? And so I decided that, and like, it kind of wouldn't have occurred to me at first because, as I mentioned, like, I don't have children. I also am single, so I have no plans. Well, not that single people can't have any plans. I am single, comma, I have no plans to have children, comma, I have no one to have children with. But I wrote down that they could provide free childcare and equal paid paternity leave, which I think is something that we don't think about enough until we have to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? That it's only when you're faced with, fuck, how am I going to go back to work?
Yeah.
That it seems like, oh, that could have been important. And I think that's something that we should all be talking about and like maybe lobbying for more. Mm-hmm. And when we see people building, you know, new office blocks, that like, can we write to the company you know, who are opening their office there and go, are you putting in a creche? Or like, not even the company, but when we see, you know, big like buildings that are designed for four or five or six different companies, mm-hmm. are they designing that with a creche?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like are we designing our world for the people who live in it?
But you'd have to go right back and look at the insurance companies, because the cost of having a baby room in a creche is so exorbitant that loads of creches now aren't doing baby rooms, and you can't put a, you know, you might have a local creche that you can put a baby into because they're only taking children at 12 months and you have to go back to work at 10 months. You know, like there's loads of other factors that make it too difficult to go back.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. But also, look, it was definitely a choice and I love it, you know, and I'm really happy to be at home with her. So, you know, it is a big, like nobody forced me to stay, me to give up and nobody forced me to stay home. It is both, you know, the difficulty that having her, that kind of spurred us into the decision. There were a number of elements. So it is very much like loads of people just want to go back to work and I just didn't want to go back to work. And then you had the people that are, you're not going back. Oh, no, good for you.
That was Jennifer Stevens, former editor of Irish Country Magazine and a whole lot of other titles, and currently freelance journalist, who wants me to tell you that she is available for commissions. You can follow her on Instagram at JenStevensDub. And I would like to give a big thanks to my producer, as always, Liam Geraghty, whose own podcast, Meet Your Maker, you can find at meetyourmaker.ie and wherever you're listening to this podcast. I'll catch you again in 2 weeks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.